Hello, this is Richard Outram, and welcome to the Prepare for Growth podcast series, bite-sized wisdom for leadership and personal development. So thank you for taking time out to join me. I'm so grateful for this unique opportunity. All right, and in this week's Prepare for Growth podcast, I'm thrilled to introduce Bobby Rodriguez, founder of Bobby Rodriguez Production Inc. The company was founded in 1981 by industry experts who specialize in creating innovative, sophisticated, and entertaining special events. With over 80 years of combined experience, BRP has developed a rich knowledge and understanding of special events, entertainment, and production, resulting in long-standing reputation for producing memorable, meaningful, and fun events. His impressive array of clients actually include many Fortune 500 companies, including AT&T, ADP, McDonald's, and GE. This is a conversation about a man who followed his dreams with passion and perseverance, and he's going to share those wisdom bites with all of our listeners today. So Bobby, welcome. I'm so thrilled to have this session with you. You and I have had a couple of conversations, and what I can tell the listeners is, from my viewpoint anyway, there was an instant connection. I really enjoyed that, Bobby. And so,
thank you so much. Again, it was my pleasure.
Welcome to this session. So the typical structure, Bobby, is, as you know, three areas. What have you learned? Okay, what would you change? And what are you grateful for? And then the last part of the podcast session is a quick round where I ask some quick fire questions, okay? But the meat and potatoes of the podcast session in sharing your wisdom bites is, what have you learned? So let's kick it off now, Bobby.
Well, let me jump in for a moment and make a couple of corrections on that wonderful, impressive introduction that you made.
Okay.
In 1981, after being a full-time musician on the road for, well, actually, I was on the road for 7 years, and then when I moved to Florida, I performed and co-produced a show that lasted for 3 years, that was the hot item in town for 3 years, that won all sorts of awards. I decided to go into business in 81, and that was, there was no staff of experienced people. It was me, myself, and I.
Yeah.
And had I known then what I know now, I probably never would have started my, business. I went from a performing artist to a businessman, and I didn't know anything about what I was doing. I was shooting from the hip constantly, and it's the school of hard knocks, as they say. So I just wanted to make that correction real quick.
No, thank you. And that is the crux of this, you know, hour or so we have together, because that is just a wonderful story. I love my, you know, listeners, especially the younger generation who are coming up in leadership and management roles, to kind of learn a bit about this, those school of hard knocks and what you've learned and those wisdom bites you can impart to the listeners, okay? And
sure.
So with that, my first question is, are there any specific personal life events that actually propelled you to follow a path of music and production?
Well, they're not necessarily together. Music, the path of music really started when I was 7 years old. Or even before that, my mom, who was not a professional musician or singer, but had a lovely voice and obviously loved music because there was music at home all the time. And growing up, I listened to just about everything from Bach and Beethoven to Little Richard and you know, all kinds of music. So I ran the gamut musically, but at the age of seven, I joined my church choir. And then for the next probably 15 years, whether with a church or outside of a church, I was part of some kind of a choir. So the voice was really something that I was in love with, not just singing as a solo artist, but singing as an ensemble. And that was always in my heart. Got by the time I was 13, 14 years old, I started my first band. So I was always dabbling in music.
Yeah.
Never did I ever think that I would be in the music business or a professional musician, because it was important that, no one in my family had ever finished high school, let alone go to college. And so that education thing was extremely important. It was important to them, and it was important to me. And when I finished, I went to the first university in the country that had data processing as a major, part of the City University of New York. And when I got out, I was 21 years old or 20 years old, and I was a computer specialist.
Yep.
And of course, this is pre-PCs. You know, there were no home computers at the time. This wonderful iPhone here, or can you see it? Yeah.
Yes, I can.
Is more sophisticated than the computer that sent the man to the moon in 1969.
Yeah.
And not only that, but if a computer back then can do what this would do, it would take the size of my entire building.
Yeah.
I mean, that's how far we have come. So anyway, that was my aspiration at the time. And music was a means to that end. I had bands, I played in nightclubs, made money on the side that helped me buy the books to go to school and all the rest of that. And in 1969, I moved to Los Angeles from New York City. And I was working for the largest software company in the world. Of course, software then is totally different than software now. But nonetheless, I was living a dream. In New York, there was no such thing as a singles complex where you couldn't be over 35 years old. And back in the late 60s, so needless to say, I don't want to tell you what that was like. Swimming pool, jacuzzi, tennis courts, things that I'd never even seen growing up in the streets of New York. Suddenly one day I get a phone call from some musician friends of mine back in New York. Bobby, we're putting a new band together. We want you to sing with the band. Are you nuts? I am living the life of Riley here. I'm making good money. I'm doing this. I'm doing that. No. We're not doing this for fun. We're doing this to make the big time. I'll call you back.
Yeah.
Gave my job a 2-week notice, quit my career, and I never looked back.
Bobby, I tell you, when we talked, and that was the big hook for me, because when you started to describe, you had the world was your oyster at that point. As you said, kind of computer science and technology was kind of hitting a bit of a stride, not quite as it would in the mid 70s and 80s with Microsoft and Apple and so forth. But you were hitting your stride, and you probably had all these opportunities around the world to you. And yet you took the call, and your friends kind of convinced you to quit that great life and take a really big risk. And so this is about passion and perseverance. And so what inspired you at that moment in time? What inspired you? Because I could never do that, Bobby. And this
there's a wonderful song that I love to sing, and it's so appropriate at this moment. It's called Young and Foolish. Why is it wrong to be? I was really young and foolish. I saw these dreams of stardom and the stage and the lights and it really wasn't that. Music was always in my heart. Even while living in California, again, I was singing with a choir, and people were saying to me, why aren't you doing this full time? And so I followed my heart, and much to the dismay of my parents, needless to say. I made the choice, and there were certainly in the subsequent years, there were many days that I said to myself, why? Why did I do that? I could have been making going home 9 to 5, making a nice check. And, you know, because needless to say, eventually when going from a full-time musician to a full-time businessman, it was like jumping from the fire into the frying pan or vice versa. It was not easy.
It's tough. So on that, Bobby, tell us a little bit more, because we're going to get to the big break in a minute, which is just a fabulous story. I want to spend a lot of time, but there must have been, you quit after that 2 weeks. Tell us a little bit about that journey, because, you know, that journey to, for, you know, in a musician, perhaps some of the struggles you had. And then we're going to take that choreography and take it from there to business. And then obviously the big break that you had. So what were that early days? You quit your job. And you were doing what for a period of time?
Well, when I got back to New York, I was I did a couple of odd and end jobs here and there, bartending at a friend's local bistro, and worked in a couple of rinky-dink bands, playing a lot of sleazy nightclubs in Manhattan. But that didn't last long. I was very lucky in that. Within a year, I landed a job with, there's a band that was, most of the people listening probably don't remember, Joey D and the Starlighters. That was a band that was number one in the world in 1962-63. The Beatles even were their warm-up act when they performed in Europe.
Wow. Before,
literally months before they came to this country. And of course, I wasn't in the band then. I was still in school at 62, 63. In 1970, I joined Joey D and the Starlighters, who was still traveling worldwide. Just a few months after being part of the band, we were an instrumental part of the first rock and roll revival in Madison Square Garden, the Forum, probably 15,000 to 18,000 people. You know, here I am, the largest crowd I ever worked was for a couple of hundred people in a nightclub, and now suddenly I'm opening the show to 18,000 people in Madison Square Garden. And so that was the highlight of that whole part of my journey. And so I was very lucky in that, you know, that was a stepping stone to other things that I wound up doing. Since I'd always been kind of a leader in the things that I've done, when I left Joey, I started another band that I was in charge of, and another band after that, and spent 7 years on the road, traveling around the country in playing a lot of fancy cabarets and hotels and nightclubs. And when I moved to Florida, and the main reason I moved to Florida was because the disco era had pretty much put most musicians out of work. Only the cream of the crop could find work. Yeah. And my agent in New York, when the last band that I was in, they said, "We want to come home. We've been on the road for 12 straight months. We want to come home." I said, "Well, you can come home, but there's no work for you." So at that point, I had some connections in Fort Lauderdale, and wound up moving down here to put together a show that had never been done before. It was a combination of theater. It was done on a theatrical stage with a cabaret nightclub band, a 10-member band. And we did vignettes of different Broadway shows, The Wiz, West Side Story, Sha-na-na, 50s, doo-wop. And we won all sorts of awards. And it was a great time for me. Again, being off the road, and we were local celebrities.
Yeah, absolutely.
So when that came to an end, as every gig does eventually, I found myself out of work for the very first time ever. And I didn't like the feeling, and I'd also gotten ill at the time, so I was running through my savings. And I didn't like the thought of of depending on being a solo artist. And again, being a leader in most of the things I'd been doing and producing so many things that I had done prior to that, I thought, hey, I can start a production company and do what they call industrials. These are entertainment packages for corporations that want to showcase a new product or something like that, because I had been involved in a number of those. I had no idea how difficult it would be. I started out and I'm making calls all over the country. I can do this for you. I can do that. I didn't land one job. And what kept me alive was I basically was a booking agent because I knew all the entertainment in town. And I booked a lot of private parties and then eventually weddings and bar mitzvahs and funerals, you name it. And one thing led to another, and I started getting more and more involved with music festivals.
Yeah.
And then I co-produced back in the mid-80s, the very popular Hollywood Jazz Festival at the time.
Oh, I remember, yeah.
And I performed in it myself because yeah. I now had my own 18-piece jazz orchestra. And before you know it, I started getting calls to produce more festivals. I did, and just by coincidence, a lot of them were ethnic. I produced, co-produced the first Hispanic festival in Broward County, which lasted over 20 years. I produced an Italian festival, three Japanese festivals, and then, of course, music events. And the soon-to-come Broward Center for the Performing Arts, which hadn't even broken ground yet, had approached me because I was in a volunteer organization for them. And you're the festival man, and we'd like you to come up with an idea that's never been done down here before. Something unique that we can not only do for our members, but for the community, invite the community in, and we can promote the soon to come Broward Center. Okay, so I come up with this idea for a medieval event where all of the members of the organization, which were mainly older women whose husbands had more money than they knew what to do with, and the women had more time than they knew what to do with, they loved the idea of a medieval event where they could all dress up in these medieval gowns and have actors groveling at their feet. And so I spent probably a year in putting this event together. And long story short, there was a conflict between the financier and the Broward Center. They had a clashing. I got caught in the middle. The carpet was pulled out from under me 3 months before the event was supposed to take place. Meanwhile, I had contracts with people all over the country. Now, Richard, I tell you, God was looking over me because not one person said to me, I have a contract, you got to pay me. Everybody said, we understand, because I told them I'm going to try and do this event next year. So everybody let me out of their contract, including Medieval Times in Orlando. I had booked their entire show. And I spent so much time in researching and putting this event together that I decided, you know what, I'm going to do this event myself. So now here I am. I am now preparing for the following year. Once again, 3 months before the event is supposed to happen, the city of Fort Lauderdale, who was my major sponsor that year, decided that they were going to put up another festival that had a long reputation just down the road from me, which was a free event at the same time. And I said, yep. That's impossible. You're going to kill me. No, one has nothing to do with the other. So I canceled the event the second time because I knew that I would take a bath. And yeah. I couldn't afford to do that. So now my credibility is really waning because this is the second time I'm canceling a lot of the same people. And honestly, I don't know how I found the courage to continue and do it again. But finally, year three, This was January 1992. We put on the first, it was called the Medieval Fair. There was a two-day medieval event that was held down at Snyder Park by the Fort Lauderdale Airport. And, oh, I've got to mention one more thing. A friend of mine who's the executive director for big festival up in Palm Beach, who used to work for the city of Fort Lauderdale, came to me several months before the event is supposed to happen. He said, Bobby, I heard you're doing this medieval thing at Snyder Park. Yeah, listen, we know each other for a while. I just want to let you know there's never been a successful event at Snyder Park.
Yeah.
Thanks for telling me this now. But I am moving forward with this. It's been 3 years in the making. And knock on wood, Richard, it was not a huge success. But again, knowing what I know now, there are very few first-time festivals that ever make a dollar. Usually, it takes several years before they start making money. And to say I broke even was a huge success the first year.
Right. You know, Bobby, you're being really humble, because I can tell you one thing. You know, passion and perseverance is the theme of this thing. But Bobby, for the listeners, is actually talking about the Florida Renaissance Festival, which has been going on for many, many years now.
28 years,
almost three decades. And I can tell you, when I first connected with Bobby and I learned that he was the original founder, and having gone through this pain to put this thing on, I would take my kids there. My wife and I would take our kids there for 3 or 4 years consistently, and they loved it. And they really loved it, Bobby. So, you know, for everyone listening who's ever even, you know, been to, you know, one of the sessions, it's the beginning of the year for Florida residents. I know it happens in other parts of the country. It's a fabulous show. It's a fact, you can't get bored of that. And so thank you.
I'm very proud.
Yeah, absolutely. And you should be. It's absolutely fantastic. So on that there, on that point, you mentioned some obstacles and how you overcome them. What's the, because now you're entering the zone of, you know, really getting into kind of the nuts and bolts of business now, Bobby. So if you had to impart, you know, a couple of wisdom bites for the listeners about what was the business lesson you learned there? What was the business throughout that experience and having now a very successful festival 28 years later? What would you say would be the one or two big business lessons you learned in that experience?
Well, it's interesting. I had a conversation. I was telling one of my employees today that we were going to be talking.
Yeah.
And he touched on some things that I thought about. And that is that, you know, in going to school, no one ever taught him, and he's a young man, he's in his early 30s. Nobody ever taught him, as no one ever taught me or probably any of us, how to balance your books, to know about financing, how to invest a dime in anything. These are things that they just don't teach us in school. They're so fundamental. And these are, you know, when you don't know them, unfortunately, if you have to learn it the hard way, you wind up making some terrible mistakes, some costly mistakes.
Yeah.
So, you know, regardless of what career you are in, do your due diligence in terms of what it's going to take to live life, not necessarily just your career, you know, your day to day, you know, how you're going to pay your rent and what's your plan B. And that sort of thing.
Yeah. You know, boy, it's an interesting point, because I was reading only the other day, there was an article about, it was really about leadership coaching, and the author started off by saying that he's done thousands of businesses, but he always starts off with, what is your life plan? What is your life plan? Because, and you know, most executives would kind of scoff at it. Well, what's a life plan got to do? He said, as you start to identify what your life plan is and what the key aspects of your life are going to be and what your legacy is going to be, whether it's your family, your community, spiritual, you know, financial or whatever, you start with that as, you know, a prioritization. Then you go to your business vision, then you go to your business plan, and then you figure out your priorities around the way. And I think that's what you're saying. It's, you know, that's one aspect of our lives, all right, in terms of the business world. But there's a greater aspect of this which we can't forget, which is what else in your life truly matters, right? And it comes back to your life story, Bobby, where, you know, you followed your dreams, right? You followed your passion. You could have probably had an easier ticket making lots of money in the computer, you know, software world, but you chose a different path. And there are many aspects of fulfillment in that, Bobby, I'm sure. I always see a smile on your face about that. So that's wonderful advice, and I appreciate that.
Well, you know, I'm sorry.
On that point, Bobby, let me just quickly go.
Yeah,
go ahead. The point when you mentioned about financials and balancing the books, etc. So, you know, I've come across many leaders of organizations and entrepreneurs who maybe not be self-aware enough to know what they don't know. They know what they do know and where their hearts lie, but they really don't know what they don't know. And so when you face those challenges, Bobby, did you bring experts in at the right time? Did you try to kind of really gain an understanding yourself and then bring in the right time? How did you do it when you were kind of struggling with areas that you weren't fully conversant with in the business?
Well, I certainly would go to, there was one gentleman that I tell people that he was kind of my mentor. He was much older than I, self-made millionaire several times over.
Yes.
And I love to listen to him talk about his life and his lessons, because, you know, a lot of the mistakes that he made, just by listening to him, I would avoid making the same mistakes. You know, so although he was not my teacher per se, and I didn't go to him for help, I certainly learned a lot from someone who'd been through it all many times.
Yeah.
And so I would definitely, for those students out there, don't underestimate older folks.
Yeah.
Don't reach out to them and learn about what they've done and how they've done it, because those are things you cannot learn in school.
Absolutely. Great advice, Bobby. Great advice. Absolutely. Okay, so...
So I just wanted to add, you know, we talked about having a plan. Again, most of my life, I never had a plan for anything, especially when I was a full-time performer. I was just living show to show, you know, and everything for me, fortunately, worked out that way. But you can't do that when you're in business. You have to have some kind of a plan. Not only a plan A, but you got to have a plan B. And another piece of advice that I learned from my dear friend Elaine, who I co-produced the Hispanic Festival with, she used to always tell me, Bobby, paper trail, paper trail, paper trail.
Yeah.
You would look at her desk, and there'd be piles of paper. You know, this was before the digital age. But she knew where everything was. And if anybody called and said, hey, XYZ happened, oh no, hang on a second. She would go through this and pull it out. My notes are right here. You said, and I can't tell you how many times that has saved her butt and has saved my butt. You know, because we had a paper trail. And so just a piece of advice, paper trail, paper trail, paper trail.
That is great. That is great. So on the path of music now, you've got a band which has been playing for decades. And I love those local bands. I try to watch as many of them as I can. So what has been the glue that's kept you together?
Again, I guess perseverance.
This is
no, I tell you, I am really blessed. What kept the band together in the earlier years, now the band's been together well over 30 years.
Yep.
And actually, Unofficially, we started in 1978, and officially we started the Bobby Rodriguez Orchestra back in 81. So we're looking at 39 years as the Bobby Rodriguez Orchestra. And back then, what kept us together was work. Believe it or not, there was a point for probably a good, I'd say, 7-8 years where the band was working. Now, mind you, this was anywhere from a 15 to 19 piece band that was working 3-4 days a week and sometimes twice on Sunday. Yeah. And that's unbelievable, especially in today's market. You know, back then I'd be working 75 to 100 dates a year with my orchestra. And now I'm lucky if I have a dozen a year, you know. What's keeping the band together today and for the last 10 years or so is a combination of, I have a wonderful book. The orchestra is made up of the book, which is the music that you have,
yeah,
which challenges the musicians, and then the musicians themselves. Top-notch musicians want to perform with other top-notch musicians.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it's the chicken and the egg. I don't know which one comes first, but they work together beautifully. And in the last 10 years, it's been at a point where I don't have to pull teeth to get the band to rehearse. They look forward to rehearsing. And I have a beautiful rehearsal studio that they enjoy playing in, and that's what keeps us together. And, you know, we just rehearsed. Unfortunately, it's outdoors now because of the pandemic. We rehearsed last Monday out in the side of my building. I spread everybody out, so everybody's about 10 feet apart. And that's the only, unfortunately, that's the only time that they've had a chance to play with other musicians in the last 4 months.
So, Bobby, on that point, because it's an interesting one, because many years ago I read an interesting book which was about, you know, building great teams. And the name of the book, I can't remember the exact name, but it was about building virtuoso teams, not necessarily, you know, around music, et cetera. It was just generally a business book. And it talked about, you know, actually one of the great artists that they mentioned who built great virtuoso teams was Miles Davis. All right. And how he was able to pick the talent, you know, and put that team together and mold the team to greatness, right? And I've always been fascinated, Bobby, and maybe you can help me understand this, is when you're putting a band together, and, you know, I'm not, you know, musically inclined, you know, I can't tell great musicians from others, you know? I can appreciate them, but I can't pick them. When you've picked, you know, band members, how do you know the right complement of talent, that this one is, you know, just a great artist versus another? I mean, how do you go about doing that?
Well, there's two components that I look for. One certainly is musicianship. You know, I've often have had guys sit in my band either because they were invited or because maybe one of my regulars got sick and sent in a sub that I was unfamiliar with, and he came in, I listened to him, I go, wow, this guy's he's pretty good. Or maybe I go out somewhere and listen to a band and there's somebody who impresses me, I get their card, that type of thing. So the musicality, the musicianship is always number one.
Yeah.
But just as important is, especially if they're going to be part of the team, is someone who is a team player.
Yeah.
I can't tell you how many great musicians I have had in my band that after a while I just don't call them anymore because of one reason or another, that they didn't bring any unity to the band. They didn't bring any synergy to the band. They were focused on themselves and their playing and nobody else.
Yeah.
You know, so it's just as important to have somebody who is dedicated and can play. So that's what I look for.
And so your singular piece of advice on that, Bob, because this is great, because now we can apply this to the business world, is what's your one singular piece of advice of building a great team? You've mentioned a couple of points there. Would you have, as you try to mold a fabulous team, what would be your advice to youngsters on how you'd go about doing it? What would you look for?
Well, you know, there's a phrase that the Rotary Club has. It's called service above self.
Yeah.
That's the tagline for the Rotary Club International. And as a Rotarian, we say it every week, service above self. Well, whether it's a business or a band or whatever, you have to think of the team first if you're really going to be successful.
Yeah.
Because ultimately, if you're just looking at taking care of number one, pardon my French, it's going to bite you in the ass.
Yeah. Understood. Yeah. Great advice. And that leads us very nicely into the next point I want to make. You're involved in many, you know, charitable, philanthropic causes. Big part of your overall life plan, as you mentioned before, is more to life than, you know, strict business or your career. What's your passionate cause?
I don't have a passionate cause, unfortunately. I'm involved in so many things. Again, the gentleman that I spoke to that works for me this afternoon, we were talking about our conversation. I mentioned to him that my opinion has always been that you should give back to whatever field you are in.
Yeah.
And so consequently, and because I wear so many hats, I've been involved in a lot of different organizations. For many years, my avocation was acting. So I was one of the founders of the Professional Actors Association of Florida. As a musician, musical organizations, as a certified festival executive in the festival and events business, I've been on the board of the International Festival Association. In helping the community, I'm a member, a longtime member of the Rotary Club, and on and on and on. It's important to me to be involved, even if just a little bit, because, you know, time is precious, and you can only spread yourself out so thin. I, as a matter of fact, if I can add, in the early years of my business, and for business purposes, I was joining, being in the events business and the hospitality business, I was involved in the hotel association and this association and chamber of commerce. And after about 8 or 9 years of that, it was like there was a meeting every day of the week. And it's like, wow, enough is enough. What am I doing? You know, so I started narrowing things down and focusing on what was most important to me. And so now it's just a handful of organizations.
Great. Okay, great advice. Okay. So Bobby, we're going to move to the other segments now, and we're going to come back to the quick round. But what would you change, Bobby? What would you change, business or life? What would you change?
If there's one thing that I could change in my own life going all the way back, would be to have learned to enjoy reading, for reading to be a passion instead of a chore.
Yeah.
I am self-diagnosed as dyslexic. I had a major reading problem as a child, which really held me back from a lot of things. And that's the one thing. I have an older brother who, although he didn't finish high school, he taught his two children to love reading. And again, even though he didn't finish high school, he loved to read as well. And these kids could read a book in a day. And it amazed me and the journey and the imagination that they had because of it.
Yeah.
And, you know, in studying, whether it was for personal, for music, or for business or whatever, having to read and study things and learn things to this day is still a chore for me, but I do it out of necessity. But that's the one thing.
That's awesome. Do you have a favorite genre of books?
I don't read books for pleasure. Unfortunately, I just read books, you know, to learn this computer or to learn this trade or to learn how to fix this or, you know, that type of thing.
Well, I couldn't agree more with you, Bobby, about just expanding your horizons through reading. I personally try to read as much as I can. I try to impart that to my two boys and everyone I come across, because you just constantly learn. And that's important, whether in business or in life in general. It's fabulous to...
Again, and giving back, I'm a Screen Actors Guild union card actor. And they have something called Book Pals, where professional actors will go to schools, primarily grade school. And I was involved in this a few years ago, where I would go into a classroom and read to these kids.
Yeah.
Of course, I had no trouble reading children's books. So, you know, but to teach these kids the importance of reading.
That's wonderful. All right. What are you grateful for?
Oh, my God. I'm grateful that I'm still here. There's no grass growing above my head. you know, even with this pandemic, I just have so much to be blessed for. My career, my festival, my wife, my life. I'm a very blessed man, you know.
That's wonderful.
And if I had known I was going to live this long, I would have taken better care of myself.
That's awesome.
As they say.
That's wonderful, Bobby. That's wonderful. All right, the quick round. So I plucked one of your favorite quotes, which is a beautiful one. And I wanted you to expand on this quote, but your quote basically said, people don't remember what you say or do. They remember how you make them feel. Why is that your favorite quote?
Well, I use that line mainly in talking to people that work for me in the festival business. You know, that's the business we're in. I mean, you know, as a businessman, certainly I'm running, again, example of Florida Renaissance Festival. I'm doing this, it's to make money, but it goes way beyond that. The event brings so much joy to so many people, and it's so meaningful to so many people. And we can't forget that. You know, it's important that we understand how and why we bring so much joy to people's lives.
Awesome. Beautiful. Beautiful. Okay. Musical or not, who's your hero? Could be musical, maybe not, but who is your hero and why?
You know, I've never told anyone this before, but I have two older brothers. Unfortunately, one of them, the oldest, passed away 2 years ago. But my next brother, older brother, he doesn't know this, but he's a hero of mine, because he had a lot going against him growing up, much more difficult. We're both street kids from New York, but he's 7 years older, and it was much tougher for him than it was for me. And again, personal issues that went through family-wise. And he managed, he married a lovely woman, had two children, and I mentioned earlier, he taught them all the right lessons. He taught them so that they would not make the mistakes that he made. And he's my hero because in order to raise his family properly, all his life, he had to work two jobs. He worked, I want to say 35 years for the Veterans Hospital, and always working a second job. He did what it took. He had the determination and the perseverance. And, you know, one of the things, and we talked about a certain point in that doing things the right way. You know, Spike Lee's Do the Right Thing.
Yeah.
The title of the movie.
Yeah.
To do the right thing oftentimes is not easy.
Yeah.
An easy way out, the fast way out when nobody's looking, a lot of people will do that. But that's not the right way. The right way sometimes takes a lot more effort. And my brother did it the right way. And he raised a wonderful family. I admire him for that. So he's my hero.
That's wonderful. Wow. I hope he gets to listen to this. That's beautiful. All right. So two great musical quotes. Let's keep going on the quotes to comment on. So I picked them out here and I really liked them. They resonated with me. And I'd like to hear what you think about them. Music is the great uniter, an incredible force, something that people who differ on everything and anything else can have in common. And that was by Sarah Dessen.
I love it. It's so true.
It's so true, right?
I just did a concert at the Broward Center for the Performing Arts last November. The theme was Broadway to Hollywood. And in the show, I mentioned the fact that although, you know, we have so many countries with different languages, there is truly one universal language, and that's music.
Yeah.
And music can bring us together. It can bring joy, tears. It can unite us. Think of a favorite movie of yours and then imagine that movie without any music in it. Oh, my God.
I'll tell you what one of my favorite ones is, Bobby. I'll tell you what right now. Saturday Night Fever.
Okay.
I can't imagine that without music, Bobby.
There you go.
That is awesome. That is so true, though. Do you have a favorite artist of all time, Bobby?
No.
Of all times.
Again, growing up, I listened to so many different types of music. And as a singer, I have to tell you, it's kind of interesting because I went from, as a teenager, singing folk music. Peter, Paul, and Mary, if you can remember who they are.
Yeah.
The Kingston Trio, that type of thing. And then into doo-wop, 50s, singing on the corner and in the subway with four other guys and singing 50s music. And then as I got a little older and I started forming bands, I fell in love with R&B and singing Sam and Dave, Ray Charles. Another change, suddenly horn bands came in. Blood, Sweat, and Tears, Chicago.
Yeah.
And I said, oh my God, I love these horns. They're incredible. And then, of course, I started the Bobby Rodriguez Orchestra, and suddenly now I got into jazz and swing music. And I went from being an R&B soul singer to a Frank Sinatra type singer. So I really run the gamut, you know, and musically, I love it all. I love it all.
That is tremendous. And to the listeners again, we're on Zoom here and Bobby's smiles and hand waving is just tremendous. It's beautiful to see that, Bobby. You know, this is about passion and perseverance, and I'm seeing it just come out in everything you do. So I really appreciate that. The second music quote, which is someone who lived many years ago, from Confucius. He said, music produces a kind of pleasure which human nature cannot do without.
Well, I said that. No. I wish I had said that. That's perfect. I mean, that follows suit with what I just finished saying.
Absolutely.
I cannot imagine life without music, you know, let alone a movie. I mean, life without music. And you know something? It's interesting because I spoke to a few people who are not, believe it or not, hard to believe that there's some... that there are people out there that who think of themselves as not people who enjoy listen to any particular kind of music. They don't listen to music. I don't listen to music. But meantime, if music was gone, I guarantee you that they would notice it real quick.
Yeah.
Because it's everywhere. It's in our blood.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So the Bobby Rodriguez Productions, Inc., you offer, you know, many other event services. You know, I've seen team building events and so forth. Just as a bit of plug for your company and what you do, what's your most popular event?
Well, again, as BRP is an event company, so, you know, we've... what we have done in the past, which is all unfortunately dead right now, any kind of a private social event, fundraiser, convention, or whatever, those types of things, unfortunately, have come to a dead halt right now.
Yeah.
But in terms of what's my favorite, there was something, I don't know if you're familiar with the Carbonell Awards. These are, it's a local award that's been around for 40 years or so, that is given to different theater companies and actors. It's kind of South Florida's version of the Tony Awards.
Got it. Yeah.
And there was a point in time when one of the Broadway moguls was living down here and was involved in every year there'd be an award show. And he would bring in big name stars on a Monday night to partake in this award show. And for about 5 years, I was the musical director for it. So I had the pleasure of having my orchestra on the stage, sharing it with a plethora of big name stars. And then I took over for, I believe, 2, maybe 3 years as executive producer. And so that span of 8 years was probably my highlight in terms of my orchestra and music, because of the people that I met from Broadway. And I'm a Broadway lover. I love theater, and especially the American musical.
That's great.
I love it.
Yeah. That's great. Okay. So you're the last take now, Bobby, and this is for all the young business leaders out there. I'd love to summarize your wisdom. I mean, obviously, the words that come to my mind, Bobby, is not only passion and perseverance, as you spoke about, you know, your life journey and some of the obstacles you overcame, and even your brother. That was a wonderful shout out for your brother as well. But I also think about courage and conviction. All right, and so those are the words that come to mind. I've thoroughly enjoyed this. Your parting words to young leaders. What is your one single advice to young business leaders out there? One single advice.
There's a line, and when we first spoke, I told you that my brother shared with me when I was in a very low point in my life. I pretty much lost and everything I had and had to start all over again. And he wrote me a note, which I have on the wall. I have on the wall here somewhere. Oh, it's, you can't see it, unfortunately. It's right behind me. And he wrote me a note. He was very upset that I never reached out to him for help.
Yeah.
And he said, in the confrontation between the rock and the stream.
Yeah.
The stream always wins, not by strength, but by perseverance.
Wow.
And that always stayed with me. And when I, you know, I've been knocked down many times in my life, and there were a few times that I stayed down a little too long, but the bottom line is I always got up. I always pulled myself up by the bootstraps. And after this situation, and I got that note from my brother, I always got up as fast as possible. I wouldn't feel sorry for myself and allow myself to stay down. So perseverance, that's an important component.
What a wonderful way, Bobby, to end this session. This has truly been a pleasure, truly a pleasure. I love you, Bobby. This is just fabulous, fabulous, you know, wisdom bites and advice.
Well, Richard, I am really looking forward to the day that we can sit down face to face and have a dinner and chat, because it's a pleasure. It's an absolute pleasure.
Thank you so much, Bobby. All the very best. Stay safe in this environment. As I said, when I kicked off this session, there was an instant connection. So I can't wait to see you personally and sit down and meet my wife and my family and so forth. And we can really exchange some stories here.
But I look
thank you so much. Absolute pleasure, you. Bobby. Take care of yourself. All the very best. You too as well. Thank you. I hope that you found today's session valuable. If so, please follow me on Instagram @outcome.richard and post your comments. Thank you again. Until the next podcast.